You're watching The Sports Objective, the podcast for Pirates.
Welcome into just another sports podcast live here on the Sports Objective Network. I am joined, just as I am each and every Wednesday night, by my buddy, my partner in crime, my podcasting compadre on the outskirts of Virginia. Ladies and gentlemen, it is the head coach of Northeast Academy, Mr. Stevie Fly. How you doing, Stevie?
What's up, buddy?
Oh, not too much, man. Just sitting here as we sit here on the eve. You know, week zero is week zero, and I love week zero. I enjoyed all the games Saturday night and Saturday afternoon from Notre Dame to Hawaii, from Louisiana Tech to Jacksonville State. I watched every single game for week zero of Saturday. But the real start of the college football season, week one, if you will, kicks off tomorrow night, Thursday. So we're sitting here on college football eve. So I'm fired up and ready. Before week zero became a thing, the first Thursday night of college football season was probably my favorite night of the year. Steve, you're supposed to reply to that.
Yeah, look, I'm hearing double right now. Yeah,
Okay. Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, if you're watching, we have some audio difficulties. TV's hearing double. Bubba, do you
Steve,
have trust, an idea of how you fix that?
Steve, press sign out and back in.
All right,
Kyle and I will talk for a moment.
Yeah, me and Bubba will take it from here. But, yeah, Bubba, we look at tomorrow night. Start of college football season. You got Florida and Utah, UConn, NC State. So, you're going to be on the road. Are you going to miss all the games? I guess maybe you'll be able to listen to them on your phone.
My dad will be probably doing the driving at that point, so I'll be able to watch on my phone. And then if I am driving, I'll be listening while he watches. But really looking forward to that Florida-Utah game. Cam Rising, the talented Utah quarterback, I knew the latest I had seen is that Matt was talking about that earlier, with his wife, Chrissy, being a Gator. He has interest there, and he was saying that Cam Rising may not play at all now. So
the guys on Neuheisel and the show pony, Chris Childers, was saying on their show yesterday that they really doubted he would play from what they're hearing. He may play, but if he plays, it's one of them deals where he's really known for his mobility and using his legs, I guess. Right. So maybe one of them deals where he plays and just not able to run it as much, or they may be better off. You know, if you take away a mobile quarterback, you know, one of their primary weapons, you may be better off just playing somebody else. Yeah, but if he doesn't play, then, that changes, I think, things dramatically. I think Utah's defense is still good enough, particularly at being – in Salt Lake, for them to win the game without him, but it certainly gives the Gators a much better chance. And Stevie's back with us now. Stevie, are you still hearing double?
No, I'm good now. I'm good now. I don't know what happened, but I'm good now.
Yeah, I've heard of seeing double. I've never heard of hearing double.
Well, every time you would say something, like about 3 seconds later, I would hear it all over again, and it was blending.
Oh, that's a nightmare. I couldn't imagine. That would drive me crazy having to hear my voice.
I mean,
so very quickly, before I let you guys carry on, Stevie, we were talking about the Florida-Utah game. What I'm interested in seeing, last year, obviously, Anthony Richardson, the quarterback for the Gators, fourth overall pick to the Indianapolis Colts. Graham Mertz coming down from Wisconsin via the transfer portal.
Yep.
Highly touted coming out of high school. I mean, just for whatever reason, it did not work out at Wisconsin. But I've heard good things about him, and I'm very intrigued to see how he performs.
Yeah, it's amazing what a change of scenery might do for you. But, that should be something something to watch for in that Florida Utah game.
Yeah, no doubt. Like me and Steve, me and Bubba were just discussing, Florida's or Utah's highly touted quarterback. It looks like he may not play at all tomorrow night, which would affect them greatly. You know, you also got NC State, UConn tomorrow night, Stevie, which is up in
at UConn.
Yeah, East Hartford. So I don't, you know, UConn was a much improved football team last year. Okay, according to Matt, Cam Rising is out, just announced. So that is confirmed. Utah's quarterback will not be playing. But
that's a big play right there.
No doubt. So I'm sure a lot of people will be taking the Gators in the next 24 hours before the line comes down too much. It was 6. I believe the spread was 6. It's probably already came down now. If it hadn't, now would be a good time to get that bet in.
Exactly.
But UConn, NC State, UConn was much improved football team last year, made it to a bowl game. If you go look at them statistically last year, it is amazing they went to a bowl. They had one of the worst offenses in FBS. I do think, you know, NC State got a transfer quarterback, new OC. UConn's defense is pretty good. I do think that UConn will probably make that a game for about 3 quarters, but NC State's going to, I would think, pull away late.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any means.
No, I don't think so either, just because the style of ball in UConn plays. They like to grind it out, play tough defense, play keep away, run the ball. So, no, I think it'll be close for about 3 quarters.
Thursday night. I didn't realize how many Thursday night games there were.
Well, let's go over them. Just go over them real fast.
All right, hold on. Let me get it right back up here for a second because I clicked on Florida. I see Thursday games.
Yep.
Good Lord. You sure you want to go out? Eastern Illinois and Indiana State.
Well, let's skip the FCS. Let's do FCS only.
Okay, Elon at Wake Forest.
Okay.
Let's see. Kent State at UCF.
Yeah, okay. Should be a blowout.
Tennessee Tech at Furman. State at UConn, like we talked about. Florida, Utah. Nebraska at Minnesota.
That's an interesting game. There's one.
That
for
should
you.
Be an interesting game because, and that's something you got to watch out too. Nebraska really needs to get back on track after struggling for a few years.
And they will. They got the right guy coaching them now. I know he didn't do a good job with the Panthers, but he's a hell of a college coach. Did a great job at Temple. Did a great job at Texas A&M. He'll turn Nebraska around.
Yeah, and then you got let's see where we're at. South Dakota, Missouri,
UAB, and UAB,
A&T.
That's going to be interesting. A&T, you know, they're good, as we found out a few years ago. Trent Dilfer's debut at UAB.
Yeah.
So that has some intrigue to it.
Yeah, then you got, let's see, Southern Utah to Arizona State. And
That's another intriguing one. Southern Utah, I don't know anything about them, but I do know Arizona State just announced that they are imposing a bowl ban for violations from the previous staff, and they announced it Sunday night, and they waited last minute, and I heard their players are very, very, very upset, and things were not going well in practice this week. So if Southern Utah has a pulse, watch out.
Yeah, and then the last game, Shorter at Samford. Have you ever heard of Shorter?
I've not heard of Shorter nor Taller. But,
Shorter
at Stanford. All right. Well, I have some.
They've got a big.
You said Shorter at Stanford or Stanford?
Samford. S-A-M.
Okay, yeah. Bobby Bowden's alma mater, formerly known as Howard, but now known as Samford. Well, yeah, you're right. There's not a lot. It's about 3 good games tomorrow night, and then a couple of intriguing games. I'm telling you right now, if Southern Utah has a pulse. And I know nothing about Southern Utah. So Shorter University is in Rome, Georgia. There we go.
That's home of Double A.
Home of Arn Anderson. That is correct. Yeah. I'm telling you, if Southern Utah has any kind of a pulse, I don't know what kind of FCS program they are. I'm telling you,
that could be it.
Arizona State not happy right now. Their players with that bowl ban last minute, so that could be an interesting one. But anyway, move on from that. We We got East Carolina, Michigan this weekend, Stevie. The Pirates make the trip up Down Arbor to the Big House. We're going to talk North Carolina, South Carolina here soon with Chris from the Spurs Up podcast. But let's touch on a little East Carolina, Michigan. Obviously, the Pirates are huge underdogs. I believe the spread is 36.
Yeah.
What do you think it would take? Put you on the spot. Ooh. What do you think it would take to pull off what would be the biggest upset in ECU history? And in terms of point spreads, it would probably be one of the biggest upsets
in college football history.
Yeah.
Well, you know, first thing you've got, there can be no errors. They can't make any mistakes. And you've got to have that run defense for ECU that was pretty good last year. It's got to really step up because, you know, Michigan will try to run it down your throat. You know, on offense, I know they were talking about, I think it came out today, you could see three quarterbacks playing for ECU on Saturday.
Who's the third?
Good question. I did not hear who the third was. He said, but I think it was Donnie said, the offensive coordinator said, you could see as many as three quarterbacks.
There you go, Bubba. Bubba's going to chime in. Who's the third?
Who's the third quarterback?
True freshman Raheem Jeter.
So, are we really in a situation where
quarterback by committee,
where Mason Garcia has not separated himself enough, or Alex Flynn, where we would be playing a freshman?
Apparently, or either he wants to throw something different at Michigan, and I don't know. Maybe
I'm calling BS. I'm calling BS.
Well, you know, he didn't. I know they said it was up until this morning, they still had not named a start quarterback. And then I think the press conference today said you could see as many as three. And I don't think he ever named a start quarterback. So
I'm calling BS. I think it's going to be Mason's show. And
well, I think so too. But I mean, he's trying to play mind games.
Exactly.
With
and that's what I think. Are you wearing a Macho Man Randy Savage t-shirt?
Heck yeah, dude. Look at that.
Oh, yeah. Can you do a Randy Savage impersonation?
Oh, yeah. You want me to get my glasses on, too? I got my glasses on.
Yeah, hell yeah. You got a cowboy hat?
I don't have my cowboy hat. Hold on.
All right. We're going to snap into a Slim Jim here with Stevie.
Snap into a Slim Jim, guys.
Oh, yeah. Macho Man Randy Savage personified. Yeah.
One of the best of all time, buddy. One of the best of all time.
Oh, absolutely. You know, I get off on a tangent here about wrestling, but lost a couple of legends last week with Terry Funk. And, you know, and which was sad. I love Terry Funk. Terry Funk's one of my favorites.
Funk was different. I remember getting my first introduction to Terry Funk was probably the Flair Funk angle from 89. But then you go back and look at him, the guy, you know, and there was a big difference between Funk and what happened with, unfortunately, with the other one. Funk lived a long, long life, and the other one did not. He taken away way too soon.
My first introduction to Terry Funk was actually in the WWF Saturday Night's Main Event.
Oh, well, that's true, too. I did see a little bit of him on there.
But obviously, when he came back from Hollywood from doing Roadhouse and Over the Top, you know, the feud with Flair, you know, I was legitimately, when he turned heel and, you know, power drove Flair on the table, which you never saw back then, and then had the Brandon Iron and was teaming with Great Muta, and you had Gary Hart.
The JTEX Corporation.
Yeah, I was legitimately scared of Great Muta and Terry Funk. Yeah, I was about 9 years old at that time, and I thought they were both complaining. Like, why are they so evil? You know, it was just, and that's all. Awesome. They're doing your job well.
Believable back then.
Yeah, and they were doing the job well. But, and then the other pass is Bray Wyatt. Obviously, Bray, Wyndham Rotunda, the son of Mike Rotunda, the nephew of Barry Wyndham, the grandson of Black Jack Mulligan, dies of a heart attack, you know, heart related conditions, you know, supposedly brought on by COVID.
Yeah.
So
36 years old.
Yeah, 36. Extremely sad to lose Bray. I was a huge fan of the original Bray Wyatt, Wyatt family.
Yeah.
The Swamp People, you know.
It was different.
I loved it, man. I loved it. it reminded me a lot of Danny Spivey's character Waylon Mercy, which I thought, which I thought was killed way too soon. That character, but I did not care for the Firefly Funhouse or the Fiend stuff. Yeah. But I did love the original Wyatt family stuff. But anyway, we won't talk about wrestling. That's not why people are watching. They're watching for us to talk about college football. So as we were talking about East Carolina, Michigan, it's going to take a monumental. It's basically asking a team to do the impossible. Could it happen yet? Could it happen? Is it likely to happen? No.
I mean, nobody thought App State would go down there and beat them either.
They were coming off a national championship.
Yeah, so this like you said, this would be they always talk about the App State Michigan game. This would be a lot bigger than that for ECU to pull out this.
It wouldn't sound like it, but in terms of Michigan's number two in the country, we got a brand new quarterback.
Probably better than they were last year.
Michigan, yeah, no doubt. Honestly, like I told Kevin Monroe last night, 28-10 is a score I have in my head, and I'd be extremely happy if we lost 28-10. I really do think we could keep the score in check, so to speak, with the new rules, the new clock. What do you think of the new clock rules, Stevie?
What is the new clock rules now?
Did you not watch Week Zero football, Stevie? Did you not watch Hawaii and Vanderbilt?
When I got home from work, the Notre Dame game was already out of doubt, and then I missed the Hawaii game. And I think
there was a bunch of games: Jacksonville State, UTEP. Yeah. But the clock no longer stops on first down, except for the last 2 minutes of each half. So it's basically the NFL now. So games move by a lot faster. And what I think the negative to that's going to be is it's going to really make comebacks a lot harder. College football is always a lot of fun. You see a lot more comebacks in college football than you do in the NFL. And I think new clock rules are really going to damper that. But anyway, right now we're joined by Chris Phillips from the Spurs Up podcast. Going to talk a little Gamecock Tar Heels. And, you know, we normally try to avoid talking Tar Heels here on the podcast, Chris. So we were definitely going to have somebody come on and talk about it from the South Carolina perspective. You got College Game Day in Charlotte, neutral site game, two very, you know, high-profile quarterbacks. What's the feeling in Columbia going into this one? You guys are 2.5-win underdogs, I believe.
That's right. Kyle, Stevie, first thing, appreciate you guys having me on, and best of luck this week. And I know ECU travels to the Big House to take on Michigan in what I think is an intriguing game. I'm just curious to see how East Carolina fares against one of the best teams in college football, or at least we think right now one of the best teams in college football. So I'll be keeping my eye on that one earlier in the day. But, yeah, South Carolina right now a 2.5-point favorite. I would say, guys, there's a lot of confidence amongst Gamecock Nation. You know, despite I think most folks think that Vegas has got it wrong, and we know that, you know, they don't build those mansions out there in the desert off winners' money. But we've seen what Shane Beamer and company have done as underdogs during his tenure. You know, 7 of his 15 wins have come as an underdog during his first two seasons. So I don't think South Carolina fans' confidence at all is wavered by what the Sharps in Vegas think. And, you know, I think after the way you ended last year, beating Tennessee, beating Clemson, an impressive showing against Notre Dame in that bowl game loss, but 8 wins in year 2 of Shane Beamer, your main core pieces are back again in your quarterback, Juice Wells, your top weapon on the offensive side, and, of course, Nick Emenwori, DQ Smith, your safeties in the back end. While there are question marks, I would say the confidence and excitement and optimism is at an all-time high in Columbia entering this ballgame.
When you look at this matchup, and you look at the two quarterbacks, obviously people have Drake May as a Heisman Trophy candidate for UNC. Spencer Rattler's been very successful at South Carolina. Do you feel like that he, how do I want to say this, because of the press Drake May has been getting, do you think Spencer's gonna maybe go out there and try to show out? I mean, obviously, you just want to go execute the game plan, but it seems like Drake May is being held as the greatest quarterback, you know, since Joe Montana.
You know, guys, I think anytime you're a player and you come into a game week and the opposite player on the opposite side, I should say, that you're facing, you know, the guy at your position, that anytime he's getting all of the hype and all the praise and the accolades, you know, I actually heard Marcus Lattimore talk about this a couple of years ago on another podcast. He mentioned, you know, in games when he was a freshman at South Carolina, and one of the things that really motivated him, right, not that you need motivation, the SEC to play your best, but he did find motivation from, they'd come into game weeks and they were talking about this team's running back and how great this guy was and, you know, giving him all the praise and accolades, and that fueled him in his mind to play his best, to play even better, elevate his game, and show why they should have been talking about him necessarily. I think certainly you have to think from the competitor standpoint, Spencer Rattler's got some of that entering this weekend. You know, Drake May is, and I think that's one of the big reasons, guys, why North Carolina is the favorite in this football game. You look, Drake May, sort of the media darling. He's the Heisman favorite, top five future NFL draft pick, if you will. And, you know, Spencer Rattler, I will say some of the skepticism, some of the doubts are some of his own doing, right, with the inconsistencies, the inconsistent play. You know, last year, for 10 games, he was not very good. Let's call it for what it is. He caught fire end of season. But I think some folks are still wondering, okay, who are you really? But when it comes to Spencer.
What year is Spencer?
He is going to be a redshirt junior, I believe. Yeah, I think redshirt junior, because 20 was a freshman, 21, yeah, junior, yes, redshirt junior. So I was expecting guys Spencer Rattler to leave after last year. You know, I thought he was going to be a one and done. Especially if South Carolina won 8 games, I would have figured he would have had a successful season. But, you know, as last year taught us, you just never know. You never know what's going to happen and how it plays out. And so Gamecock fans are glad he returned. But you look at this game, guys, I think certainly there's a motivation factor to go out and prove that last couple of games of last season wasn't a fluke, and that's who he really is, or he's closer to that version of his game than what we saw in the first 10 games. And I think they're excited to get going. Again, I think Spencer Rattler, not that he necessarily needs that extra oomph of motivation or that extra push, if you will, but I think certainly that's something that could fuel him. And while I think there are other factors in this ball game, obviously, guys, you can't get around the fascinating matchup that is Spencer Rattler against Drake May, and I think one of the best quarterback battles we're going to see all season long.
You know, you look at UNC last year, their defense was god-awful. It's been god-awful for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Chizik's been tasked with trying to get that straight. I believe it's year two now for Chizik back as DC at Carolina. What do you see for them from their defense in terms of returning players maybe they brought in from the portal? Do you think Carolina's defense is going to be better than – when I say Carolina, I mean North Carolina. Do you think their defense is going to be better than it was last year? Or you know, if it's not, Spencer Rattler's going to tear them up.
Yeah. I mean, Kyle, I was about to say, do you think it could be any worse? I mean, when you look at the numbers and I talked to Andrew Jones of Tar Heel Illustrated. I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with him, but I talked with him a few weeks back. We did kind of a opponent preview series talking about all the opponents on South Carolina's schedule. And, you know, he was very candid and blunt about the defensive struggles. And, you know, how he did mention the first couple of games sort of skewed some of the numbers maybe because they gave up, 60 points to Appalachian State. Yeah. The numbers were just – I mean, they gave up 42 points in one quarter or something crazy like that.
Yeah, they did play better as the year goes on.
Yeah, they got better as the year went on, but still, you look at those numbers. I mean, they didn't do anything particularly well, right? They couldn't stop the run. They couldn't stop the pass. They couldn't pressure the quarterback. They couldn't force turnovers. But so you look at them this year. You know, they're led by Miles Murphy up front. I think he's a nice piece on the defensive line. They've been preaching physicality, right? That's all you hear at a Tar Heel Nation, Tar Heel camp is physicality, both offensively and defensively, right? They feel like they have not been physical enough. And you look at both lines of scrimmage. I mean, last year they couldn't protect Drake May all that well, although they made it work at times. And defensively, guys, like we just mentioned, they couldn't stop a nosebleed. I like Cedric Gray at the linebacker position. I think they've got some capable players. Power Eccles there as well. I think he's a solid player. And then defensively in the secondary, you know, what's interesting is when I talked to AJ of Tar Heel Illustrated, he mentioned that, you know, a lot of guys left in the portal, right? If you look, they had like 4 or 5 guys leave. And the way he made it sound was this, guys, in this NIL world, right, it's we've gone away from, you know, you're a student athlete at our favorite school and to this is like a professional sport. We're managing a roster, right? And so you don't push kids out of your program, but with NIL and kids getting paid, I don't think it's as frowned upon to sort of kind of urge a guy out of the way to open up a roster spot to go out and get somebody better in the portal. I mean, right, that's just the reality of college football and kind of where we are. Every school does it, right? I mean, whether you do it intentionally or unintentionally, we all do it. So he made it sound as if maybe there were some guys hit the portal. They kind of encouraged to get out because they had some other dudes lined up waiting in the wings. Elijah Huzzy's a guy they picked up out of the portal. They're starting cornerback, DB1 for them, I think. he's going to be a fantastic player, everything we've heard. Big question for them is at the star position coming into this game. Antavius Lane's a guy they picked up from Georgia State. They're not sure the status of him. And I believe it's DeAndre Boykins, I believe is his name. He hasn't practiced for a couple of weeks. That's one of their best defensive players. So, you know, all in all, I'll say this, guys, I'm expecting South Carolina to be able to move the football. If they can't move the football, I think it'll be a concern, no doubt. And I think they're going to probably have to score 30 points at minimum to win this football game. But again, you asked me, is UNC, are they going to be better defensively? Again, I come back to, I don't think they can be worse. But at some point, you kind of are what you are. And I think it's just a talent issue for them. Although, you look at their recruiting rankings, it tells you they should be better than they are. So this will be a really interesting year for Chizik.
I think two problems there with the recruiting rankings in UNC. It has been a problem for a long time. And Mack Brown also. Mack Brown's a great X's and O's coach. He's not a player developer. And I think that was his problem. That was his downfall at Texas. And I think, you know, it's what's hurting him at North Carolina. Yeah. You know, they get 4-star players, 5-star players. But, you know, I don't think his programs do a very good job, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, developing players and taking them from being a good high school player to a Division I football player. So I think the era of the transfer portal will probably, with Gene Chizik there as DC, will probably benefit Carolina greatly.
Yeah, I think so as well. And again, you continue to look, like you mentioned, Gene Chizik and what they're going to do defensively. And I think for South Carolina, what's so interesting is they have question marks of their own on the offensive line of scrimmage, right, guys? You return 50 less starts than you had a season ago for an offensive line that gave up 31 sacks and finished outside of the top 100 in rushing offense. And, oh, by the way, you don't have a proven RB1, right? We all feel optimistic and high on what DeKarrion Joyner can do, but he's never played running back, and he's RB1 for you going in this game. Juju McDowell at RB2, he's a nice scat back, but he's never been more than that. And then you have the rest of your other two guys, Mario Anderson, a D2 transfer, and Dontavius Braswell is a true freshman. So there are major question marks in the running game. You've got Spencer Rattler, who is an inconsistent quarterback. His ceiling is here, but his floor is also extremely low. That's the issue with him. And then Juice Wells, guys, he's going to play, but I'm not sure he's 100% because he's been dealing with a foot injury this offseason. So that'll be really interesting to see early on as well. And outside of Juice Wells, they don't have a proven weapon that has done it at South Carolina. They added Trey Knox in the portal, Joshua Simon, both guys are tight ends. Xavier Leggett returns, and he had a solid end to last season, but he's never finished with more than, 400 yards or so receiving in a season. And then the rest of those guys are completely unproven. So, you know, UNC problems defensively, no doubt. And, you know, some things they're going to have to figure out as the game goes on. But South Carolina and a brand new OC as well, they got some issues of their own. So it's a fascinating matchup, no doubt.
That's what I was going to ask you about. How is Spencer adapting to a new offensive coordinator? Is he adapting to the schemes better?
Well, Stevie, I mean, it's best shape of our life season, right? So, I mean, they're not going to come out and say that the new offense is anything but high-flying and great and everything. I will say this, though, in all seriousness, I the signs are encouraging for sure. When you hear Spencer Rattler say things to the media like, you know, there's been no transition period for him. He feels like this offense is more explosive. They've had far more explosives in fall camp than they did last year. And you heard Dabble Loggins in his introductory press conference, and everything he said is like he checked off every box that South Carolina fans wanted to hear after the Marcus Satterfield era, right, guys? Of, you know, we're going to simplify things. We're going to get the football to our playmakers. We're going to play fast. We're going to be aggressive. So we checked off all those boxes. But, guys, here's the bottom line. We're not going to know until Saturday. We're not going to know until this season gets going and we see it on the field for ourselves, because guess what? Marcus Satterfield won the presser in the offseason too. You know what I mean? There was a lot of hype and optimism and hope around the offense last offseason too. So, guys, I take it all with a grain of salt. You know, good and bad, by the way. You know, Shane Beamer in his Tuesday presser came out and said, we had a terrible practice. If we play like that, the way we practice today, we're going to get our butts kicked on Saturday again. Take it with a grain of salt, man. It's coach speak. You have no idea what he's trying to do, fire up his guys, downplay his team, whatever it might be. I believe, though, there is optimism and hope that Shane Beamer has learned from his experiences with Marcus Satterfield in his first two seasons. Brandon Dabble Loggins, this is his guy now. When they have simplified things, the reports behind the scenes have been good. And the reports, by the way, Stevie, have been that Spencer Rattler has looked incredible in fall camp. He's on the money. He's looked as good as he's ever looked during his time at South Carolina. Now we'll see if that translates onto the field.
Chris, how's the defense looking for the Gamecocks this year?
I think it's a question mark. I think it's going to be about what it was last year, Kyle. I mean, like many years, the biggest question is stopping the run. I think you look at that defensive front, you know, you lose Zach Pickens in the middle, which I think was a really underrated loss and one that not many people talk about because they're so distracted about the fact the Gamecocks lost Jordan Birch and Gilbert Edna out of the portal. You do go to the portal and get Jatias Gear from Syracuse. Unfortunately, he's most likely going to be out with an ankle injury in this game, will not play. You get Jordan Strawn, though, back from injury. The other edge, somewhat of a mystery going in this game. You just picked up Drew Tuizama from the transfer portal at UAB. How quickly can he get acclimated? Shane Beamer said he's going to play. You've got Desmond Umiazulu, a true freshman there. You've got Tyreek Johnson. Terrell Dawkins, who's an NC State transfer.
Yeah.
Hadn't done much in his career because he's been injured, but you feel like that's a guy that has potential. Tonka Hemingway, Boogie Huntley in the middle. It's going to start with those guys, right, and slowing down the run because similar to the offense. And guys, on a side note, in my opinion, these two teams are eerily similar. Like, there are so many parallels, and I think it's going to make for an incredible game Saturday night because there's so many comparisons, so many things you can look at and say these teams are similar. Line of scrimmage, a question mark for both. Inconsistent quarterbacks, brand-new offensive coordinators, battle of the Carolinas. They both need this game to set the tone for their season. Anyways, you look at that defensive side, you finish outside of the top 100 rushing defense. So you had problems running the ball, you had problems stopping the run. I'm optimistic they're going to improve at linebacker this season with the addition of a few new pieces. And in the secondary, you know, they replaced their starting corners, but Torian Gray, guys, at this point, he's earned the benefit of the doubt for what he's done with the pieces he inherited in his first season in Columbia. And you're also led, by the way, in the back end of your defense by a pair of freshman All-Americans in Nick Emanwori and DQ Smith at the safety. So, guys, all in all, I'll say this. It's a defense. It'll be determined by do they improve stopping the run. If they do that, they're going to improve as a defense. They weren't horrific a season ago, but the only reason they weren't is they were opportunistic. They've got to continue to be opportunistic. They've got to improve against the run. Guys, it has been 5 seasons consecutive that South Carolina has finished 11th or worse in the SEC against the run. It's just – it's a miracle they've won as many games they have under Shane Beamer in his first 2 years with how bad they've been against the run. So, you know, I view the defense, Kyle, again, to get back to answer your question. I think South Carolina is going to be very similar, to be honest, to what they were last year. I don't think they're going to take those major jumps in stopping the run until they get some of these guys on campus they're recruiting.
Year 3 for Shane Beamer, you mentioned the success he's had there. Started the 2021 season, unfortunately, with a field goal win over East Carolina. You know, I love Shane. Shane was, when he was at Oklahoma and we were hiring, when we fired Scotty Montgomery and, Mike Houston was choice number one up at JMU, on my list, my second choice was Shane Beamer, when he was special teams coordinator out at Oklahoma. So when you guys made that hire, I know some people questioned it in the national media. I loved the hire. I think Shane, he knows football. He's such a likable guy, which I think in this day and age of recruiting with the way these kids are and in transfer portal, et cetera, I think having a relatable coach that not only the fans like, but players like, but can still coach ball and in a pushover. I think Shane kind of got it all there. I think he's a really good fit for South Carolina. I think he'd be a good fit anywhere, just about.
Well, I tell you, he's especially a good fit at South Carolina because he sort of cut his teeth here, right? He's seen this program under Steve Spurrier at its very best, and I'm talking going to the SEC championship game. And so he knows that it can be done, and so he can sell that on the recruiting trail. By the way, guys, side note, not to rub salt in the wound, but I think that win against East Carolina, the second game of the Shane Beamer era, that might be the most underrated win of his tenure to this point, because if they lose that game, I think there's a chance year one goes sideways, and they are a 4-win team. And, I mean, are they able to rebound from that and have as good a year they had last year? Are they able to get Spencer Rattler in the portal? Like, I think a lot of things don't happen if they don't beat East Carolina. So, not to rub salt in the wound, like I mentioned, but I don't think Gamecock fans talk about how big that one was enough. But, No, guys, I mean, listen, the approval rating for Shane Beamer is through the roof. When you look at what they've done in his first two seasons, I mean, you beat Texas A&M. You had never done that in school history. Last season, you beat Kentucky and Lexington first time since 2012. You beat Clemson for the first time since 2013. You beat Tennessee, obviously. Yeah. You've had back-to-back wins over top 10 teams. So, and then you look at the recruiting as well, man. I mean, the momentum on the recruiting trail when you're picking up guys like five-star Nicholas Harbor, five-star Dylan Stewart, and you look at some of the guys they're signing on the offensive line, defensive line, they're dominating the DMV. They're doing very, very well in-state, right? They're recruiting sort of all over the place. So you factor in the recruiting momentum. You factor in they've won enough. They've had enough significant winning to really fire up this fan base as well. I mean, listen, man, in the preseason, I know every fan base has these fans, but I mean, the expectations, the hopes, the dreams are there's some folks out there thinking Gamecocks can go 9-3, 10-2 this season, which Shane Beamer, every time he's doubted, he seems to make things happen. I think that's a little bit aggressive, but it just speaks to the energy and the excitement that he's brought. And guys, again, I think he's a perfect fit for South Carolina because he sees South Carolina for what it can be. And not what it's always been. Because what it's always been, guys, we know, a 500 mediocre program. I think Shane Beamer, though, understands and sees he accepts the challenge at South Carolina, and he sees what it can be and really truly believes that it can be one of those teams in the upper echelon of the SEC and with the playoff expanding to 12 teams. And, you know, I don't see why South Carolina can't be a consistent 9-10 win per year program and compete for one of those spots. So I think that's what they're striving for. And certainly this is a huge year and a building block for his program, no doubt.
So Saturday night, is that ABC or ESPN for the game?
ABC, 7:30 ABC, yep.
7:30 ABC, got game day in Charlotte, 50-50 crowd. Who's going to have more fans there, Gamecocks or Tar Heels?
I think South Carolina is, and I that's not me running with bias or anything. I lived in Charlotte for 4 years, guys, before I pursued this business right. full-time and moved to Columbia, and now, of course, I'm in the upstate in South Carolina. But I lived in Charlotte for a while, and I can tell you the Gamecock contingency there is – I mean, it's literally the number one hub for Gamecock alumni to go to. So they will paint the town garnet and black. I really believe it'll probably be a 60-40 crowd. I'm just hoping to see a sellout because we've seen some games with South Carolina, North Carolina. I was actually at the game in 2019, and, I mean, I would say the stadium was probably 60% full. It was kind of ugly, but I think it will be a really good crowd. I'd expect it to be packed out. This is a huge game, man. So much on the line for both these programs. It's such a tone setter for both programs. And I think after the way you ended last season – I think Gamecock Nation will make a point, and I think they'll pack out Bank of America Stadium and make their presence felt.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I know Carolina's – I keep saying Carolina. It's going to be confusing to our Gamecock friends. But I think, you know, with North Carolina being the 2.5 points, I like South Carolina in this one. I know Drake May is Jesus Christ in a pair of cleats, but just watching these two teams last year, and that's all I have to base it on because I haven't seen you guys play this year. I haven't seen North Carolina play this year. I'm gonna pick the Gamecocks, and I think you guys win it by touchdown.
I'm gonna hold back on my prediction, guys, until we actually drop those every. Well, we drop them every Friday. We drop them every Friday. So for anybody tuned in, I don't want to spoil anything.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I really do believe this is a 50-50 type of game. I think it's a coin flip. I know there's a lot of folks in Gamecock Nation. And, you know, maybe this is just, I think, as we get closer to kickoff, I think the intensity and the emotion and the energy, it sort of boils over and the expectations and the dreams kind of run wild. And because I've seen some people picking 28-point victories, 35-point wins. Yeah, picking South Carolina to score like 60 points, and I'm like, guys, let's try to be somewhat realistic. I will say, guys, I think the under in this game is one of the best plays of the weekend on the board. It's 64.5. 64.5. And here's why, guys. I really believe you look at these two teams, right? I understand high-flying quarterbacks. The defenses are questionable. But you got two inconsistent quarterbacks at times. Drake May was not very good at the end of last season, right? You got two quarterbacks that can be inconsistent. You got two very shoddy offensive lines and running games. Neither team really knows who their starting running back is. I mean, to carry on Joyner at South Carolina, but there isn't a true established RB1 on both sides. Offensive line has major question marks in run blocking and protecting the quarterback. Tez Walker is most likely not going to play for North Carolina, and Juice Wells for South Carolina, he's going to play, but how healthy is he really, right? So I think there's enough there. And also, guys, primetime, game one, butterflies, adrenaline, also factor in. I heard you guys talking about the running clock, the clock rules as well. Yeah. But I think all that being said, I think the game, it's not going to be a defensive slugfest or anything, but I think it's a game you could see get off to somewhat of a slower start as these two teams kind of feel each other out and, you know, kind of settle into the game, if you will. I could see it being like 14 to 10 at halftime and these teams make adjustments. And then we start to kind of see the fireworks in that second half. But, you know, I'm going to save the prediction, guys, for Friday. Normally I wouldn't, but I really want to save it for the audience, save it for the show. But I feel confident as a Gamecock fan going in this ball game, but I really do believe it's a 50-50 game. And, guys, neither result, whether North Carolina winning, South Carolina winning, neither result would really surprise me at this point.
I'm going Gamecocks 35-28. Stevie, do you care to give a prediction in that game?
You know, Carolina, you look at, well, maybe not in the last year, but a year before, coming into a big game with Virginia Tech, the opening week, and Carolina laid an egg with, you know, Sam Howell was coming into, was supposed to be the, like you said, Jesus in cleats that year too. He was supposed to be a Heisman Trophy candidate. I don't know about Drake May. We'll see. I'm going to go Gamecocks. I'm going to say it's going to be a little bit closer than that, Kyle. I'll say like a 37-35 win.
Okay.
It's so interesting to me, though, guys, that like the line has been UNC as the favorite the entire offseason. You know, it makes you sit back and you think, like, what does Vegas know that we don't? Is it a lack of respect thing for South Carolina? Is it really just this favoritism to Drake May over Spencer Rattler? I think this arguably could be the game of the weekend, guys. I just really think when you look at the storylines, the way this one will play out, how close I expect this one to be. I mean, I think this one could come down to like a late touchdown drive, a field goal. Hey, Beamer ball, special teams playing their part. So yeah. I think it's going to be a fantastic game Saturday night.
No, I agree with you. I'm looking forward to watching it. Chris, tell everybody how they can follow you on social media, find your work, your podcast, et cetera.
Well, Kyle, Stevie, first thing, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk ball with you. Yeah, we're at the Spurs Up Show on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, wherever you get your social media, wherever you get your media, we are there. We also air a daily live show called The Daily Crow Monday through Friday exclusively on YouTube, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern time. We take questions, comments, and calls on that as well. So we encourage all your listeners to tune in and call in. And let's talk some ball, talk some smack, whatever it might be. And, of course, we also drop our podcast daily under the name The Spurs Up Show on iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. That drops every single day at 5 p.m. Eastern. And, guys, starting this season, by the way, after every single South Carolina football game, the TSUS post-game call-in show will be happening within 10 minutes of the game concluding, which will go live right where I'm sitting, and we'll just open it wide up to calls, comments, questions, but mainly calls and reactions to the game that just took place. And I think that's going to be absolutely electric. So I highly encourage everyone to tune into that. But guys, again, appreciate you having me on. It's always a pleasure to talk ball with you, and looking forward to a great college football season.
Thanks, Chris. Appreciate you coming on, and good luck to the Gamecocks.
Appreciate it. Hey, good luck to ECU this season as well.
Thank you. All right, that was Chris Phillips from the Spurs Up podcast, and I that'll be a good one. You know, I hate to give the Tar Heels any more press than they get, particularly in this market. But that is the game of the week, and that's something we're going to do if, for all our listeners and viewers out there. Every week, Stevie and I plan to preview whatever the biggest regional matchup is for the week. And next week, there's several to choose from. You got UNC App State. You got Notre Dame NC State. You got JMU UVA, I believe.
I think that's right.
I think we're going to probably go with NC State Notre Dame next week.
Yeah, that would probably be the best one to go with.
Yes, that's the plan as of right now. But, Stevie, we another thing we're going to do, as we've done so far on the show, is we do top fives each and every week. And with playing the Michigan Wolverines this weekend, thought it would be appropriate.
Yeah, that would definitely, to pull an upset off of it, would automatically
go to number one.
It would automatically trump all all five of mine all together.
So this is our top five favorite upsets that he's
favorite. See how we underlined favorite.
Yes, this is our favorites, our personal favorites. So we're not saying these are the best, you know. So if we leave something off, don't get offended. These are our personal favorites. So I'm gonna start it off, and I got a tie at number five. It is 1995 against Syracuse. The Pirates were down in that game. It's hard to remember the exact score, something like 28-7, 21-7, something like that. It made a furious comeback there at the Carrier Dome in Syracuse, New York, there in 95 with Marcus Crandall and the guys. So 95 Syracuse, and in the also at the number five position for me, Ruffin McNeil's last year. You know, I wanted to put this higher, and maybe I have since it's my favorite list and it's not necessarily the biggest upset, but 2015 against Virginia Tech, kind of what I call Ruffin McNeil's last stand. You know, it was pouring rain. I mean, it was a monsoon that game, Stevie. I don't know if you were there or not, but
I was not there. I was watching though.
We got soaked, but it was an absolute blast. James Summers makes his debut out of nowhere, and you know what an athlete he was. It's a shame he wasn't able to be used how he should have been used. But the so that's my number five, or my two number fives. What's your number five?
My number five is just a slight upset, but it was a big one. 2009 Conference USA Championship game against Houston. Case Keenum coming into Dowdy Ficklin with Houston with that high-powered offense, and ECU pretty much shuts them down, and Houston gets a touchdown at the end just to make it look close, but ECU gets the win 38-32, and that's a slight upset just because Houston was ranked.
Actually, Stevie, Houston was driving to win that game.
Yeah.
And Van Esch picked them off in the end zone.
Yeah, so we get the win, but that's a slight upset, but they were ranked. But to get a Conference USA championship game at home, and that was number five on my list.
That was another monsoon game, by the way.
Yeah, it was.
It was supposed to be heavier rain than that. It was cold that day. It was cold.
It was.
Yeah. Were you there for that one?
No, but I remember watching it home again because I unfortunately have to work on Saturdays a lot.
Right.
Once in a while I'll get a Saturday off. But, yeah, I do remember that day. Temperature was 50 degrees was the high at Dowdy Ficklin that day.
Yeah, it was in the 40s. It could kick off, and they were forecasting about 3 to 4 inches of rain for that game. And I remember I went to Big Blue Store in Kinston, North Carolina, and bought my wife and I rain suits. And then the day of the game, it ended up just being a light rain. So I took the rain suit back and wore
a ponytail. You remember the interception at the end, though?
Yes, yeah, Van Eskridge picked off Houston in the end zone.
Yeah, he did tip.
Yeah, tipped it and then picked it off to seal the win. Houston was driving to win the ball game. So my number four upset, I got another tie. This is my last tie. I promise this is my last tie. And this is back-to-back weeks, 2008, to start the season. All right, actually, you know, I put 2008, but it was actually 2000. Yeah, it was 08. I'm right. I was sitting there questioning myself, was it 09? But no, it was 08. Back-to-back weeks, we start the season off with the Virginia Tech Hokies in Charlotte. The block punt by T.J. Lee. And the Pirates upset the Hokies in Charlotte. Then the following week, West Virginia comes into town. I believe ranked number 8 in the country. And we just
demolished them.
The Mountaineers that day in Greenville.
What was that quarterback? That was a Pat White?
Pat White. And just destroy the Mountaineers that day in Greenville. The fans stormed the field, had the ugly incident, unfortunately, with the off-duty police officer's security guards. But two great memories, back-to-back weeks there. So I got my number four, Virginia Tech, West Virginia, 08.
Well,
what's your number four?
Since you made that a tie, I'm going to make it a tie, too, because I had ECU Virginia Tech from 2008, and I was – going to go, but I didn't want everybody to say you pulled Stevie and there's a tie up there. But I'll go ahead and put those two back-to-back weeks as my number four as well. I mean, just I remember watching that Virginia Tech game. And I mean, and you can go back and watch it on YouTube as well. But seeing the look on the sidelines before that punt got blocked and just seeing how the ball just went perfectly right to T.J. Lee's hand after he blocked it and takes off for a touchdown. And then the stunned look on the sidelines from the Virginia Tech players and coaches, it was priceless.
And their fans.
Oh, God.
My number three upset is going to be 1996.
Oh,
the Pirates go down to the Orange Bowl 1 week after losing to Southern Miss on a Thursday night in blowout fashion. Everybody was down in the mouth. Miami's going to blow us out. And there was a blowout in Coral Gables that night, but it wasn't the Pirates getting blown out. I believe the final score of that game was 31-6, if I remember
31-6, number 12 ranked Miami at home.
Yeah, and then that's my number.
And you're copying my list, I guess, because my number three was 1996 ECU Miami. I mean, you go anytime you can go, anytime you can beat Miami, is something. But when you go in the Orange Bowl and beat 12th ranked Miami and your unranked team, and not just beat them, but blow them out. I would love to seen the looks on some of the fans' faces in the Orange Bowl that day.
Oh, man, they weren't at that point in time, they weren't used to losing. They were not used to losing in the Orange Bowl. So, in fact, if I remember right, I think maybe Penn State beat them the week before. I believe it was the first time they had lost back-to-back games in the Orange Bowl since the 80s, if I remember correct. My number two upset, 2010. North Carolina State, they come into Greenville as big favorites, and their quarterback, whose name is escaping me right now.
Yeah, what's his name?
I can't – played for the Seahawks.
I can't remember his name.
Yeah, played for Wisconsin.
Willis?
Russell Wilson. Russell Wilson, I really couldn't remember his name. I don't know if you
remember. Oh, really? I was thought you were being sarcastic.
No, I really could not remember. Stevie, what you'll find out that Bubba and Dave and Matt know, my Achilles heel is remembering names.
I really thought you were being sarcastic.
I will literally forget a guest's name in the middle of the interview and have to look at the graphic. I'm not kidding you. I'm horrible with remembering names. It is a bad trait of mine. But yeah, Russell Wilson comes in there and throws that probably his worst day as starting quarterback for NC State. He threw three or four picks. The Pirates winning in overtime with the big interception by Damon Magazoo. One of the best celebrations I can remember having after a game. I mean, that place was packed, absolutely electric in there. The crowd was fantastic. Just beautiful weather that day. It was my birthday, actually. It was about as perfect of a day as you could ask for. So, that's my number two, 2010 NC State.
Okay. My number two, and I'm going to have to go back to the Peach Bowl year, 1991. The first win over a ranked team? For you, at number 15, Syracuse at the Carrier Dome. Come from behind win. The Pirates get the win 23-20. And to just hear the radio call that day from the late great Jeff Charles, to hear it on the radio, and that was when the whole We Believe started. You know,
they finally done it. They've beaten a ranked team.
Exactly. And they come back, you know, I've interviewed several Pirates on that team that year, and all of them talk about the plane trip back to Kinston and seeing all those people out there at the Kinston airport and all of them saying, we believe. And that's when the whole We Believe movement started. And that ECU football team really started to believe everybody was behind them and got that confidence and carried it on through the rest of the year.
Yeah, no doubt. That was a huge win.
Graves. You remember Marvin Graves for Syracuse was the quarterback then?
Yeah. Interesting enough, we were just talking South Carolina football. We beat South Carolina the previous games. We had beaten South Carolina and Syracuse in back-to-back weeks. Missed those days. My number one upset, and, it may be yours also. 1999, Hurricane Floyd. East Carolina, Miami. Game gets moved to Raleigh, Carter-Finley Stadium. Pirates down big at the half. you know, it's over, baby. Hurricane's going to walk away with the victory. And you just and you kind of saw it towards the end of the first half. The Pirates started playing a little better, you know, and then that third quarter, the Pirates, you know, start chipping away. And then all of a sudden in the fourth quarter, it's a one-score game. And, you know, Keith Stokes with that touchdown there late in the fourth quarter and then the defensive stand at the end. And, you know, the Pirates come away with the huge win over Miami. The goalposts come down in Carter Finley Stadium. And that's my number one in a game that I have watched probably more than any other East Carolina game over the years in a replay. I have that game. I have a VHS copy and a DVD copy. And that one, without a doubt, is my number one. And I didn't even have to think about it.
Yeah, it's between that and the Peach Bowl game for me. But, yeah, my number one, obviously, I think anybody that's watched ECU Pirate football over the years is going to pick this one. I mean, to have all that, you know, all that going on when you can't even get home, you've got to play on your one of your biggest rivals' fields, and you're playing a team with, I mean, you got Clinton Porter makes his debut, well, not his debut, but as a starter.
Right.
And then you had Reggie Wayne, among other weapons that Miami had, and you go down 23-3, and man, to see them come out, I remember watching it and seeing they were down 23-3. I said, well, you know, like my dad did several times with the Washington Redskins, I was like, this ball game is over. And then you look up, and like you said, they just kept chipping away and knew that when that Keith Stokes catches that touchdown and the defense makes that big stand, I mean, there was no way. And for the people in Raleigh to think those goalposts weren't coming down, that's just unreasonable for them to think that. That was definitely coming down. And one of the biggest wins in Pirate history.
Yeah, no doubt. And the best part to me about the goalposts coming down was afterwards, NC State fans were furious. And we told them.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you remember what we told them? Our administration told them, and our fan base kind of knew, if you beat us in Greenville, on Thanksgiving weekend, you can take the goalpost down to Dowdy Ficklin. Your fans can storm the field. So they had their opportunity to get their revenge, but they just couldn't quite get it done. So the goalposts come down again, this time in Dowdy Ficklin, but it's the Pirates that are taking them down. That's probably my favorite part about that whole goalpost incident. We gave them the opportunity. We said, you can take ours down. And they couldn't get it done.
Bubba is given his in no particular order. He names that 91 Syracuse and the 95 Syracuse game. Yep. Also the 96 and 99 Miami game, the 08 West Virginia game. He gives honorable mentions, which we'll do. You want to do your honorable mentions before we do Bubba's and mine?
Well, I didn't even do honorable mentions. I didn't even list them, but I can think of a few. I can think of a few off the top of my head. 2014 North Carolina. They were ranked number 23 in the, I believe, the AP poll coming into that game and were favorites. So that'd be one, 2014 North Carolina. Another one would be, I did not prepare myself for 95. Well, 99 West Virginia, 95 West Virginia. I should be better prepared for this, for these.
Game from
2002 TCU. Yeah, I'll tell you what. I'll give you one. I'll give you one from last year. UCF. In Greenville last year was a huge upset for the Pirates, and BYU was a slight favorite, I believe, when we beat them last year. It was very close spread, but I did not prepare myself for the honorable mention upsets. So, Bubba, if you and Stevie have a list of those, if you and Bubba have a list of those, go ahead and give me your honorable mentions.
I got you. Well, me and Bubba both agreed on two of them: Virginia Tech 2014, Boise State in the Hawaii Bowl.
Oh God, how did I leave that one out?
Bubba's got 2010 NC State, as you had in your list, and then 2020 SMU. I'll tell you another one too that was, I think we may have been ranked higher. Correct me if I'm wrong, Bubba. You may know. But the Pitt win at Dowdy Ficklin 91, we may have been ranked a little bit higher than them, but I don't know if they were favored on not to win. But that Pitt game came a couple weeks after the Syracuse game, I believe. That was really what started with the Syracuse game. But that Pitt game really got us over as Syria. I think that put us in the top 20 then, as far as beating Pitt.
Well, it was a huge moment, the 2-point conversion by Jeff Blake. And then Pittsburgh drives down to try to get in position to win the game or to have a chance to win it. And they, you know, clock runs out on them and Pirates hold them to win it. And that was kind of the moment where we had beaten South Carolina, we'd beaten Syracuse. I think that Pitt game was the moment where Pirate fans realized that, you know, this was going to be, you know, a very special season. You know, I don't know what other bowl options there were. If we'd lost another game that year, there was very few bowls. You know, so if we lose one more, we're probably in the Independence Bowl. Yeah. So instead of the Peach Bowl. So that Pitt game was huge at the time. I think that's when the Peach Bowl talk really got revved up.
And you remember the quarterback for Pitt then?
Not off the top of my head, no.
Alex Van Pelt.
Okay, yeah, know the name.
The current offensive coordinator for the Browns now.
Okay. But did you guys have any more honorable mention upsets?
That was all mine and Bubba's. I read all Bubba's. Let me see if Bubba's got any more up here. Yeah, we were 20th and Pitt was 23rd, so not really an upset with the Pitt game, but
huge win.
Huge win there.
Go ahead.
I've heard several of the Pirates that I interviewed from that team that year say they never heard Dottie Ficklin as loud as it was, and the ground actually shook when Blake scored that 2-point conversion.
I've heard that many, many times. Yeah, that place was absolutely electric that day with the in terms of how loud it was when Blake got in for the 2-point conversion. Well, Stevie, unless we got anything else. I don't know if any plugs we need to get in, Bub. If there's any plugs we need to get in, put them on the screen now so I can botch them. If not, I'm going to give you about 5 seconds to do that. There we go. Hey, a Pirate's Life for Me. Hey, that's nice and big. I can read that. Pirate's Life for Me. That is Friday. Bub, I'm not sure who you're going to have on. There we go. We got tiny print there. John McMillan will be on. And I believe, Bubba, if I remember right, that is a friend of your father's. Who is a Pirate. I don't know much about him, but Pirate's Life for Me. Check that out Friday here on the Sports Objective Podcasting Network. And that's each and every Friday. Bubba profiles a somebody, you know, from Pirate Nation, a fan, an alumni. And it's a good concept. And that's each and every Friday here on the Sports Objective Network. And L&K Custom Homes there, Kevin K.K. Walker. They're in the Triad, licensed general contractor. If you need a house built or you need a remodel, contact KK. Look, go buy a house. Go buy yourself. Go buy two houses. Get them to build you two houses. Get them to maybe you want one in the mountains and the beach. So call 336-688-8461 if you are in the market for a house to be built. If you're looking to buy a home, or I'm assuming he probably also does remodels. Kevin KK Walker. At L&K Custom Homes. And, you know, one day Dave says he's going to win the Powerball and have KK build him a big house.
Dave is so nice, he will buy you one.
He will. Okay. Well, that's awesome. Dave's going to buy me a house. All right. I appreciate that. So
I've got to get up on the list if Dave's buying houses for folks. I've got to get up on the list.
No doubt. Steve, before we go, man, who does Northeast Academy play this weekend?
We travel to Swan Quarter this week to take on Madam Mesquite High School. So hopefully the weather will cooperate with us. I know they're calling for a lot of rain down there, some wind, but you know, we'll see. We got our fingers crossed we'll be able to go down there Friday night.
Anyway, how did things turn out last Friday? I know week one you guys did.
Not up. I lost Kyle for a second.
Well, there, I'm back.
There you are. Now, last week wasn't a good week. We dropped a close one, 22-20 to Community Christian. And one of those games as a coach where you get your players look like they're in slow motion all night, and you just honestly, it was one of those games where like I would just wanted to take the pads and stuff off of one of them and go out there myself, because I was like, I can do this better than y'all were doing it tonight, and I'm almost 50 years old. But you know, it's one of those games that makes you get these gray hairs up here, Kyle. And it was a tough one. But you know, Community Christian had a good team, and we get a rematch with them in our place in a couple of weeks. So hopefully it'll turn out on our end this time.
Well, good luck this weekend as you travel to Swamp Water. Hopefully the game gets played. I guess it's going to depend on how much water that field can hold, how easy it drains. Yeah. The rain will be out of here by Friday. So let's hopefully you guys get to play that game against Matamuskee High, and hopefully Northeast Academy comes away with the Vic.
Let's hope so. My contract, my incentives in my contract is suffering, us volunteer coaches.
So as a volunteer head coach at the Northeast Academy, that's very interesting, by the way. It's men's football, but still, for the head coach to be a volunteer position, that's still it's a bit surprising to hear that you don't get paid something.
Well, you're not really volunteer. They have people in mind, and you go before a committee. And it ain't like I just showed up one day and said, "Hey, I'll coach." And
then right. Well, I understand that,
but it's something, and I get it. I joke with the kids, like one of our rivals is Halifax, and one year I told the guys after the game, after practice one night of that week against Halifax, look guys, if you, of course, there's no contract. I said, if you win this game, that doubles the amount on my contract. My incentive clause kicks in, and my pay doubles. And they were like, "What?" I said, "Zero times zero is still zero." So, but yeah. Justin Butts is back again talking about Wayne Christian. We miss playing you guys too. We miss playing Wayne Christian. I was actually just talking about that game against Wayne Christian tonight at practice. So, maybe one day we'll hook back up again.
There you go. Yeah, I got make it happen.
Yeah,
you talk to your AD Stevie, and see if you can get Wayne Christian back on the schedule. Justin, do your part. Talk to people at Wayne Christian and make it happen. Get that rivalry, the storied rivalry between Wayne Christian and Northeast Academy.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got Michigan Saturday. College football tomorrow night. College football tomorrow night with Utah and Florida, NC State, UConn, as we mentioned earlier. And, you can I'm sitting here. I'm getting myself flustered here, Stevie. But, check out Oliver. Playback. I knew I wanted to mention something else. Sunday, I don't know what time we're doing it, but Sunday night we will have the playback. I'm assuming we're going to have a Sunday night. Dave and Bubba are going to have to get back from Michigan, but if we don't have a Sunday night, we'll have a Monday night, and we will discuss the Michigan game. We will be taking your calls. Give yourself 24 to 48 hours to kind of let things digest. When you call the fifth quarter call-in show immediately after the game, everything is so raw, so this gives you time to really kind of think about it. Power football playback, it's going to be at 8 o'clock Sunday night right now. Bubba says it's going to be at 8 o'clock Sunday night. So we'll see. I know him and Dave.
He added in the 8 p.m. or so.
Anywhere between 8 p.m. Sunday night and 8 p.m. Monday night. But anyway, I guess that's it, Stevie. I think I've rambled enough here. Have you got anything else?
I think I'm done, bud. Just hope everybody, whoever's in the path of this storm and getting some rain or whatever, I hope everybody stays safe out there.
No doubt. Stay off the roads. I think in the majority of Eastern North Carolina, that's going to be the biggest problem is flash flooding.
Right.
So stay off the roads and you should be good. So for Stevie Fly, I am Kyle Barber. You have been listening to Just Another Sports Podcast here on the Sports Objective Podcasting Network. Thank you for listening, watching, and go Pirates.
See you.